Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Kuf Tes Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the second line from the bottom of Daf Kuf Yud Dalid Omid Beis. Before beginning the shiur, let us glance at the nosei, the topic heading, one of the features of the Shas Ozer, the cornerstone of Gemara markings. We're referring, of course, to the marked Daf Gemara that you see on your screen. On the outside margin, you will notice the nosei, and we've indicated Besoch Sograyim. What we have here is structurally a piece of Gemara, a long piece of Gemara, in fact, that we have placed in brackets. The purpose of placing this section of Gemara in brackets, and you can see the length of this is indicated by the bracket length indicator, which in this case is a vertical dashed dotted line that extends almost all the way down the Kuf Tes Vav Amud Aleph. This section essentially is a series of questions that are directed at that which was mentioned above in the name of Rav Ashi and also spoken about by on the part of Rebbe Avo. After this bracketed section, you will notice a diamond with a number 2 that accompanies it. This is a function of our having started a series denoted by the diamond series marking. And we had explained the role of the diamonds in our previous year. It's noted here on Daf Kuf Yud Dalem and Beis. These represent sources regarding the prohibition of Basur B'cholav, whether it be eating or deriving benefit from it. And this particular series goes all the way till Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. So in order to preserve the continuity of the Gemara, we use the diamonds, and then sections of the Gemara that get a bit off the focus on sources for the prohibition, we have indicated with the brackets. So that in this case, it is true, we saw Rav Ashi, who introduced his source for the prohibition of Basur B'cholav. After Rav Ashi comes Reish Lakish, as we mentioned on Kuf Tes Vav Amud Aleph toward the bottom. But till we get to Rav Ashi, we are going to deal with a question concerning a detail that was mentioned above, or more accurately, a question focused on a point that Rav Ashi mentioned. And we will also read our nosei, our topic heading that we see in the outside margin. Notice we've written nosei and indicated besoch sograyim in the brackets. Sidro shel kushios, a series of questions, al ha dinemar li'el, regarding that which was mentioned earlier, kol sheti'avti loch harehu osur b'achilu b'hano, al pi ha'posuk lo'yseuchal kol to'yeva. Anything that we have, that the Torah has declared as a to'eva. To'eva is literally an abomination. It is something that we are expected to stay away from. So where you see an expression like that, lo sochal kol to'eva, we learn from that that there is an iser achilo and an iser hano'o, an iser to eat it and also an iser to derive benefit from it. So to reiterate the main point, according to Rav Ashi, where the Torah tells you to stay away from something or declare something an abomination, even if you don't see the actual word to'eva used, but the connotation is stay away from it, it thereby falls under the prohibition of eating and deriving benefit. the Gemara will raise a series of questions of things where we are told to avoid them or stay away from them, and yet we find that they are mutter to eat. Of course, this will become much clearer as we go on in the Gemara. So the Gemara opens up with a line that you find in parentheses, parentheses meaning the printer's parentheses, not the ones that we, the brackets that we superimposed, and it's a siman. A siman is an attempt of the Gemara to supply a type of memory device where one or two words is used to capture an entire topic. Here we see the siman reads, Shabbos Choresh Kile Zroyim Oysev Esbeno V'Shiluach HaKein. You will notice that on Kuf Tes Vav Amid Aleph, we have a series of double underlined expressions, and each one of those corresponds to one of the terms mentioned in this bracketed section. These represent a series of questions on the thesis or the principle that that Rav Ashi laid down earlier on the daf, namely, all that which the Torah says to abominate or stay or distance yourself from, it thereby falls under the prohibition of eating and of deriving benefit. Well, we're going to challenge that right now. Elo Me'atov. If that be the case, then Maisa Shabbos Litzeru. Maisa Shabbos is a situation where one did malacha on Shabbos. Let us say very simply, one cooked up food on Shabbos. Litzeru, the food should be prohibited to eat. And yet we know that if food is cooked up on Shabbos, without getting into the details behind the issue, but food that's cooked up on Shabbos is not something that is necessarily prohibited to eat. And yet we would suggest, let it be forbidden, litzeru, d'ha ti'avti lochu. It is something that is declared by the Torah an abomination, in the sense that the Torah warns against doing malachas, doing creative activities on Shabbos, included in which would be cooking or preparing food through cooking or baking. And yet, as we mentioned, that's not the case. That even though it is something that is forbidden, it is ti'avti loch, it is something that is considered an abomination, yet if it is done, one is allowed to eat it, which is contrary to what Rav Ashi had taught us earlier. Omar Kroh, the Gemara answers, the principle of Rav Ashi is to remain intact. However, with regard to the Maisa Shabbos, there's a special scriptural reference which enables it to be eaten. The Pasuk says, Ki Kodesh Hilochem. That Pasuk is referring to Shabbos. Shabbos is a day of holiness unto you. Hi Kodesh. The day is holy. Holy is something that is separated and is reserved for lofty purposes and not for common use. So what is that which is separated? And that's the day is separated. Vein ma'aseha kodesh. However, the activity that is done, if one violates it, the outcome of one's activities is not considered kodesh, kodesh being something that is forbidden. So based on this gzeres hakosuv, we see we'll call it a limitation. There is Kodesh regarding Shabbos, but that's a reference to he, the day, not the outcome or the procedures that are done. We continue with another double underline. We should just read our Mivneh note that you see in the outside margin. In addition to topic headings, we also supply structural notes where the Gemara introduces, where we introduce through our markings a new geometric form or symbol, we attempt to offer explanations for their presence. In this case, the double underlines represent dugmaos shel dvarim asurim, examples of forbidden things or activities, shelachora nechshavim to'eva, that on the surface they would appear to be to'eva, uvecholzos enom asurim afilu b'achila, nevertheless they're not prohibited even in eating. Hence, each one of these double underlines presents a challenge to Rav Ashi's principle. We continue. Choresh b'shor v'chamor, v'chosein pipora v'doshba. These are two separate prohibitions. The first one is plowing with two different types of animals attached to a plow. As many of you may know, there's an isser of kilayim, of mixing different breeds together. That manifests itself in all kinds of planting activities, It manifests itself in the realm of chatnez, of clothing, mixing materials, and also in this case, joining two different types of animals to a cart or to a plow and having them draw it together. So there is a prohibition in being choresh, plowing with a shor v'chamor, with an ox and a donkey, two different kinds of animals. Let us say someone plowed up a field and produced produce from such an improperly plowed field. Will one say that the produce is usur? And likewise, chosein pipara v'doshba. The pasuk in the Torah says, lo sachsom shor b'disho. One is not to muzzle up a cow while it is threshing the grains in order to crack the shell from the grain. The wheat grain or barley grain, one has an animal that tramples on it. That's part of the disha process, that's the threshing process. And during that time, the Torah instructs us not to muzzle up the animal that is doing the disha. Well, let us say someone did that. In other words, he improperly threshed his grains. So let us say one did these things, the choresh b'shor chamor, or he was chosein pipara v'doshba. Litzaru, we should prohibit the product that comes as a result of these forbidden activities. Dohati avti lahu, well, is it not something that the Torah declares a to'eva, meaning something that is prohibited to do? And yet we know that if produce is grown from a field plowed with a shor v'chamor, or cakes are baked from flour from grains that were threshed with a muzzled up cow, those products are not forbidden. The Gemara answers with an answer based on logic. It says, Hashta Uma Shabbos de Chamira. Mind you, Shabbos, which was the previous issue, which is a more severe form of violation than these two actions, and yet Ma'asel Mutarin, the outcome of Maisa Shabbos is allowed. Hani lo kol shekein. These last two activities, the Harisha and the Chasimas Pipora, which are less severity than Shabbos, all the more so, the outcome will be allowed. So that even though the action is prohibited, nevertheless the outcome is allowed. And all of these cases have as their source the posuk in Shabbos, which we said was Exeris HaKosov, and these derive from that through logic. Well, we have another question. Kilei Zroim Litzeru. Doha Ti'apti Lahu. Kilei Zroim is a mixed breeding of vegetables, where one plants seeds in the ground of two different kinds of vegetables. That's called Kilei Zroim. Kilayim is mixed breeding of Zroim, of seeds. So let's say you do that. You planted in the same hole a tomato and cucumber, and they end up growing together. Are you going to say they're forbidden? We know that they're not forbidden. So the Gemara explains, if Rav Ashi's principle is correct, then why is it that Kilei Zroim are not forbidden to eat? Even though the planting may be usur, and it's a ti'avti loch, it's an example of something that is considered a to'eva, yet we have to then understand, in order to, on the one hand, preserve Rav Ashi's principle that kol shetiavti loch is also bachila, why is this not the case? The Gemara answers, midagoli rachmona gabi kilei akerem, from the fact that the Torah reveals, in the context of mixed breeding in a vineyard context, that's a case where a person plants together with grapes, wheat and barley, let us say. That's called kilei hakerem. And it says there, pen tikdash. That's a term in the posuk, which we darshan to mean pen tukad esh. That means that if one does produce kilei hakerem, it is to be burnt. So michlal, we can infer the kilei zroim shoru, that it's only in the case of kilei hakerem that when it comes to a mixed breeding, when it comes to vines, there it is forbidden, as is understood from the fact that you have to burn the growth. So we can infer that if it's not a vine mixed breeding, if it's a kilei zroim situation, it will be allowed. The Gemara asks, v'emo, but still, who says that it should be, that the kilei zroim should be allowed? Let us suggest like this. Kilei zroim, kilei kerem, asurin, bein bachil bein b'hanah, that mixed breeding in the case of a vineyard, that should be completely usur, not only eating, but even to derive benefit from. Kilei Zroyim ba'achilo asiri b'hano asharu. When it comes to the Kilei Zroyim, at least let them be prohibited for eating, even though you may be allowed to sell it and benefit from it. Why not say that? And if we were to take this approach, we would be closer to the original teaching of Rav Ashi, because we would be preserving, in fact, an eating prohibition. The Gemara answers, Iskush lekilei behema. Kilei Zroim is compared to mixed breeding of animals. Let's say one were to mate a sheep and a goat, and it would produce an offspring. And what does it say with regard to kilei behema? Dichtiv, behemtecha lo sarbia kilayim, sadecha lo sizra kilayim. We see in this pasuk that behema and zroim are compared to one another. Ma behemtecha hayoytze mimeno muteres, af sadecha hayoytze mimeno muter. Just like by a behema, the product, the child that results from the mating of a goat and sheep is able to be eaten. You can slaughter it and eat it, even though the mating of them is forbidden. The outcome is allowed. So too, the field, the vegetables that were planted together, the mixed breeding of vegetables, hayyotze mimeno muter, the growth is allowed. The Gemara asks, well, the kilei behema gufayu minolan. What about kilei behema itself? From where do we know that the outcome is allowed? After all, what about the principle of Rav Ashi, that something that the Torah says stay away from is usur, is forbidden to eat? And here we see in our discussion that kilei behema, even though it's usur to do, we are maintaining that it is allowed to be eaten. So how do you know that? The Gemara answers, Mida osa rachmona kilayim legavoa, from the fact that the Torah takes special trouble to forbid kilayim legavoa, means for heaven, meaning as a korban, as a sacrifice. If one had this outcome, product of goat-sheep mating, he would not be able to bring it as a sacrifice. So the Torah points out or emphasizes the prohibition as a sacrifice. So we can infer mechlal de lehetyot shori, that as far as a commoner is concerned, it is something that one is allowed to eat. And the only restriction is bringing it as a sacrifice. So as we continue in this Gemara, we are reminded time and time again that the original principle of Rav Ashi remains intact. Each one of the examples that seems to be a challenge to what he says has a specific source for why they are allowed. But in the absence of some type of specific source allowing them, we'll fall back on Rav Ashi's teaching that it will be forbidden. And as a result of that, when the Torah says, do not cook meat and milk together, we understand that the cooking of meat and milk will result in something that is usur to eat and usur to benefit from. The Gemara asks, Oysu ves beno litzar. Here, this is another halacha that we've learned about earlier in this masichta, the prohibition of slaughtering a mother and its offspring on the same day. That's called oisu vespino. Let us say one did violate this and slaughtered mother and offspring on the same day. The second animal that was slaughtered improperly, it should be, according to Rav Ashi's principle, it should be forbidden to eat. And yet we know that it's not the case. So the Gemara answers, Mida osar rachmona mechusur zman legavoa, from the fact that the Torah prohibits something that has a time deficiency associated with it as a sacrifice. In other words, if something is lacking in time, the case of oso vespino is an example of a mechusur zman. What do we mean by that? We're told not to slaughter mother and offspring on the same day. Well, you should have. If someone slaughtered the mother, he should wait. That's a time issue. He should wait till the next day. If he didn't wait till the next day, that's considered mechusur zman. So something that is lacking in time is something that is prohibited as a sacrifice. So just like we mentioned before with kilei behema, we can infer it is prohibited as a sacrifice, but for a commoner, it is allowed. The Gemara asks, shiluach hakein litzar. Rashi has two expressions two explanations regarding the case of Shiluach HaKein. The second approach that Rashi takes in the Lishno Achrina that we have noted with our markings, and you can see this in the Rashi, and Rashi actually says that he prefers this approach. The idea here is that a mother bird who is sitting on her eggs, on the eggs that she laid, the Torah expects a person who comes across a situation like that to chase away the mother, and only then is he allowed to take the eggs. So the mother that's incubating her eggs is something that is forbidden, in the sense of it's forbidden to take her. Rather, the mitzvah is to send her away. Of course, our presentation right now is dealing in general terms. We're not getting into the details of the halacha. But if we look in the Rashi, the Rashi tells us that the mother should be forbidden based on the idea that in encountering a mother bird sitting, incubating her eggs, is something that is also for you to take. You're expected to send her away. So, we know, however, that mother birds are not forbidden. In other words, if, let us say, one sent away the mother and then took the eggs, and at some point later in time he found the mother in isolation, she is allowed to be taken. You can take her and slaughter it. But according to the principle of Rav Ashi, kol she'ti'avdi lo haru b'bal tochal, since at one point this mother was forbidden to eat, she should be forbidden forever. The Gemara answers, Lo omra Torah shalach le takola. Takola means a stumbling block. If our suggestion were true, that the mother should be forbidden forever, then what would happen? I would then, trying to fulfill the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, sending away the mother and then taking the eggs. Now that bird that I sent away, the mother that I chased away, if someone else comes upon her, and we would apply the principle of Rav Ashi that would label the mother as permanently being forbidden, then someone else would find her, take her, slaughter her, and be eating something that's forbidden. So, and the Torah would never have instituted a mitzvah, namely Shiluach HaKein, that would result in someone stumbling over something forbidden. Therefore, Shiluach HaKein could not possibly be labeled as forbidden. It might be forbidden temporarily, but not permanently. Otherwise, it would result in someone else stumbling upon her. With that, you can see we now close the brackets, and what we have done is we raised a series of questions on Rav Ashi's thesis, and in each case, we answered why in these specific cases, even though one is involved with something forbidden, nevertheless, it doesn't result in a prohibition of eating the result or the product. Nevertheless, in the absence of some type of specific heter, we would then fall back on the principle of Rav Ashi. Omar Reish Lakish. Now we have a diamond and a number 2, indicating that we're picking up our series of sources, different opinions as far as sources dealing with the prohibition of Basar B'Cholov. So Reish Lakish asks, Minayin L'Basar B'Cholov Shalser, from where do we know the prohibition concerning milk and meat? Talmud Lomar, there is a pasuk by the Korban Pesach. It says, Al tochlu mimenu no uvashel mevushal. That when it comes to the Korban Pesach, one is supposed to roast it over an open fire, over a fire, and not eat it gnaw. Gnaw is a situation where it's only partially roasted, and one should not eat it. Boshel mevushal means cooked. The expression boshel mevushal is a double term. She'ein tamad lomar mevushal. There's no real need to have this expression doubled in and of itself. If you want to communicate the prohibition of eating cooked meat as a Korban Pesach, one word would have been enough. Ma tamad lomar mevushal. Why the extra expression? Answer, lomar loch, to inform us. Yesh locha bishul acher. There is an example of another cooking, shehu kazeh, that is like this, like the Korban Pesach. Now, let's just go over this point. a Korban Pesach that is cooked is something that is forbidden to eat. It's a sacrifice that has been prepared improperly, hence rendering it forbidden. So the extra expression of Lushol is telling us there's another example of a cooking that results in a prohibition. And that is V'ezeh, and what is that? Zeh, Basar B'Cholav. It's a reference to the cooking of meat and milk together. Another example of cooking that results in a prohibition like the Korban Pesach. So at this point, Reish Lakish has given us a source for the prohibition of Basar B'Cholav based on this word Mevushal in the Pasuk by Korban Pesach. Amar Le Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan raises a question, and you'll notice that with our markings, this is a long question. We have a little kuf that's encircled in the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, followed by a descending vertical dashed line. This continues down the first several lines of kuf tezvav amud beis, indicating that all of these lines form the question. Rav Yochanan asks, you are giving us a source for Basar B'Cholav, but Rebbe gave us a source in a Tanaic source, which predates what you are saying, predates you, Reish Lakish, and why is it that you have to come up with a new source? Is there something that you find reprehensible about the source that Rebbe suggested? Ke'ura, kura literally means ugly, something that is you would disdain. So do you find unacceptable that which Zu Shishona Rebbe, that which Rebbe teaches in the following source? And here is the source. The Pasuk says, Lo Yisochlenu. Now this is an extra Pasuk that's found in Parshas Re'eh. The Torah is talking about Psulei Hamukdoshim. Those are korbanah sacrifices that are found to be unfit. And it says in that section of the Torah, the expression, Lo Yisochlenu. And it says that Pasuk twice. Rashi gives more detail to it, but for our purposes, we're featuring the expression Lo Sochlenu that's found in Sefer Dvarim, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Chof Hei, which seems to be an extra expression. Lo Sochlenu, the Brisa says, the Basar B'Cholav, HaKosim Adaber. The Pasuk is, this extra term seems to be referring to the prohibition of eating meat cooked in milk. Are you telling us that it is referring to Basar B'Cholav, or maybe it's referring to some other Isser in the Torah, some other thing that is prohibited? In other words, how do you know that this Pasuk of Lo Sochlenu, which when you look it up, it doesn't seem to refer to milk and meat per se? In other words, milk and meat are not spelled out over there in Dvorim Yud Beis, so maybe it's referring to something else. Amris, the Brisa answers, Tsei ulamad miyud gimel midos shatorah nidrashos bahem. Go and learn that which is unclear using one of the 13 methods of exposition of Torah psukim. And what is in fact one of these methods of exposition? Dovar halomed minyono, which simply means learning something from context. In other words, if I have something that's vague, I have a right to conclude its meaning from looking at the context. B'ma kosuv medaber, in what context do we find this pasuk? B'shnei minim, we find it in the context of two unlike items. Well, simply put, the context, as we mentioned before, as we saw in Rashi, is talking about psulei hamukdoshim. Those are sacrifices that have developed some type of feature that renders them unfit. The nature of psulei hamukdoshim is that on the one hand, you eat it outside the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, it's eaten in a non-sacrificial context. So in that sense, it's like chulin. It's like the common. It's like something common. On the other hand, there are restrictions associated with a sacrifice that was found to be unfit, that we call psulei hamukdoshim. In other words, before you slaughter it, you cannot plow with it, you cannot shear it. So it has certain aspects of holiness to which you have one animal that is really made up of two elements. That's what we mean here by the expression shnei minim, two kinds, two varieties, two elements. So the context of the pasuk of Lo Sochlenu is in the context, and that's obvious from the psukim themselves, it's talking about psula mikdashim. So afkan, so too with regard to the vague expression lo sochlenu, what is it referring to? So b'shnei minim, it's referring to basar b'cholav, meat one thing, b'cholav another thing, and hence Rebbe sees in this pasuk the source for the prohibition of basar b'cholav. Pasuk says lo sochlenu, do not eat it, namely meat cooked in milk. So we have a source for meat cooked in milk as being prohibited. Why does Reish Lakish need to cite an additional source, namely the expression mevushal, from the case of the Korban Pesach? The Gemara answers, E meahi, and as this Reish Lakish is answering, if I just would have had the source that Rebbe featured of lo sochlenu, havamino, I would have thought, hani mini ba'achila, that the restriction of basar b'cholav is an eating restriction, avo bahano lo, but as far as deriving benefit from it, that would not be restricted. Komash malon, hence I have the extra pasuk, the additional pasuk that you find by the Korban Pesach, that tells me, just like a Korban Pesach that is found, is processed in an incorrect way, is unfit not only in eating but also in deriving benefit, so too, Basar B'cholav is also to derive benefit. It's also Bahanoah as well. Hence, I need an extra source. The source that Rebbe provided would not have been sufficient. Now we turn to Rebbe. After Reish Lakish gave us his source for the Isser Hanah, well, where does Rebbe Banom Minole? Where does Rebbe know? Rebbe gave us the pasuk of Lo Sochlenu that we saw cited in the Tanaic source in the frame above as being a source for the prohibition of Basar B'cholav, but it seems that that only teaches me a prohibition concerning eating. What about prohibition of deriving benefit? Answer, Nafka Le Mehocha. Rebbe will learn it from the following. He quotes a tupsukim, Ne'mar Kan. It says over here. Over here is a pasuk that refers to Basar B'cholav. It says Ki Am Kodosh Atol Lashem, and it goes on to say Lo Sivashel Gedi B'chalev Imo. V'ne'mar Lahalon. There's another pasuk that talks about the prohibition of conducting immoral relations. Unfit actions of intimacy, and it says v'lo yeh kodesh b'vnei Yisrael. Now, intimacy is a function of pleasure, in this case, forbidden pleasure. Ma lahalon b'hanor, just like the pasuk that says in Dvarim Chof Gimel pasuk Yudches v'lo yeh kodesh. So we see the word kodesh, which is a variation of the word kodosh, is a reference to Hana. So too, in the pasuk that says, in the pasuk in Dvarim Yudalid, which said Ki Am Kodosh, which was a Basar B'cholav pasuk, we understand that it's also prohibiting pleasure, Hana. Number three, Debei Rabbi Eliezer Tana. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Lezer, a Tanaic source is provided, and it teaches Lo Sochlu Kol Nevela. Omra Torah, kishetim kerena, when you sell nevela, the pasuk itself is quoted on the side of the Gemara. You can see Devarim Yudalid pasuk Chaf Aleph. We have written in the pasuk Lo sochlu kol nevela lager asher b'sherechot titnena v'achala o machor l'nochri ki am kodosh atol Hashem Elokecha lo sevashel gedi b'chalev imoi. So this pasuk concludes with a reference to Basar B'cholav. And it says, we learn from this pasuk, Omra Torah kishetim kerena, when you sell the nevela, which was referred to in the beginning of this pasuk, lo sivashlena v'tim kerena. Don't cook it up and then expect to sell it. Because if you do cook it up, you're essentially cooking up meat with milk. If you do cook it up, you're then creating a situation where you will not be allowed to sell it. In other words, it will be usur b'hanah. Number four, Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, the following Tanaic source was taught. Lo sivashel gedi b'chalev imo gimel pomim. Three times in the Torah you see this pasuk. And we learn from this, Echad li'isra achila, one teaches me the prohibition of eating it, meat, milk, cooked together. V'echad li'isra no'ah. the other one, the other pasuk telling me the prohibition of benefiting from it, and the echod le'isir bishul, and the third pasuk telling me that the actual act of cooking them together is itself prohibited. So from here we have, as we said, another source for the prohibition of basar b'chalav, both on an eating level and even beneficial level. Number five, Tanya. We have another Tanaic source. We'll call this the Isi ben Yehuda source. Isi ben Yehuda Omer. Minayin lebasar b'chalav sha'asur. From where do I know that meat, milk cooked together is forbidden? He now provides a gezeira shava, in effect a word comparison, or a term comparison. Ne'emar kan ki am kodosh ata. It says in the context of basar b'chalav, this expression. The ne'emar lahalon v'anshei kodesh tiuli u'basar b'sode trefo lo sochelu. So we see in both psukim the term kodesh used. Ma lahalon osur, af kan osur. Just like in the case of trefo, there is a prohibition, so too in the case of basar b'chalav, there is a prohibition. V'ein li elo b'achila. Well, from this word comparison, we know that trefa is forbidden to eat. I will then conclude, likewise, by basar b'chalav, it is asur to eat. B'hanoa minayin. What about the prohibition of deriving benefit? Amris, kal v'chomer. To answer the issue of benefit prohibition, we apply kal v'chomer logic. And it works as follows. Uma orlo shelo nevda bo aveiro asuro bahano. Orlo are fruit trees during their first 3 years of growth. Fruit that comes from a tree in its first 3 years of life is something that is usur, is forbidden to benefit from. And what the Bryce is emphasizing is that no action of sin was ever done to it. In fact, you planted the tree quite legitimately. It's just that the Torah legislates that during the first 3 years of life, the fruit that is produced is also to benefit from. Basar b'chalav, shenevda bo avera, eino din shasur bano. The cooking of meat and milk together, where a sin was done, in other words, the actual cooking itself was sinful, so here you have something where a sinful action was done, certainly it should be prohibited to derive benefit from it. So let's just go over that point again. Orla, where no sinful action was done, and yet the outcome is forbidden to benefit from. Basar b'chalav, where a sinful action was done, all the more so, there should be a prohibition of deriving benefit. Well, the Gemara, the Brisa challenges that with a pircha. Ma la orla, how can you learn from orla? Shekein lo hoysa lo shasa kosher. Orla, the fruit coming from a tree during its first 3 years of life, never had a point in time where it was allowed. So that up till the completion of 3 years, you're dealing with something that never had a point in time that it was allowed. So certainly, something like that, I can imagine, is also is prohibited to benefit from. However, basar b'chalav, before it was cooked up, they were something that one could benefit from. So who is to say that basar b'chalav is also behano? I can't learn from orla. Orla has this element of stringency to it that is not found by basar b'chalav. So to this we answer, chometz bePesach yochiach. Let the example of chometz on Pesach prove our case. Shehoyselo shasa kosher, chometz is something that before Pesach was allowed. That's called shasa kosher. It was a point in time that it was allowed. And yet we know the osur bahano. Chometz on Pesach is something that not only is one prohibited in eating, but one is prohibited to benefit from it as well. So that we see that the fact that something lacks a shasa kosher, that is not the reason for it being osur bahano. Here you have something that has a shasa kosher, and still it's osur to benefit from. Well, to that the Gemara responds, Ma l'chomis v'pesach shekein onosh kores. You can't learn basar b'chalav from Pesach, because Pesach has an element of stringency that you don't have by basar b'chalav, namely, chometz, one who eats it, carries with it a more severe penalty, a very high level offense, resulting in a kores punishment. Kore's punishment being a very severe form of punishment, which you don't have in the case of one who were to eat Basar B'Cholav. At this point, the Brisa could have said something, but yet it doesn't. It could have said, okay, if you think the Kores element is the main factor in creating this Rana, well, we can go back to Orla. Orla is Osir Bano, and yet it does not have a Kores penalty. And yet, the Brisa does not make that move. It rather goes to a third topic, a new topic, and says, Kile HaKerem Yochichu, let the case of mixed breeding in a vineyard prove the point. She'ein onush kores, the one who, let us say, eats the products of a vineyard planted together with grains, though it's forbidden, it doesn't carry with it an onush kores, and yet the osir bahano. And we actually saw the source for Kilei HaKerem earlier today's shir, which was pen to kadesh. And we know that Kilei HaKerem is something forbidden to benefit from. So, at the end of the day, I'm learning from Kilei HaKerem as being the source for the Isur Hano by Basar B'Cholav. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice triangles. They are explained under our Mivneh heading in the outside margin. The triangles will appear in two different directions as we go on in the Gemara. This is featured by our topic heading, or our Mivneh structural note. The triangle you can see is featured, and we also have written there Ma'akav. Ma'akav means to keep track. These are kushios, these will be questions. Al hodikotoni bamokor shel isi ben yudo. These are questions that are raised based on things that were said in the source of isi ben Yehuda. But as we go on in the Gemara, there will be a big back and forth discussion that starts from here and goes till Kuf Tes Zayin Omen Aleph. This back and forth continues there. So the Gemara asks, Lama li gzeira shava? Why did I need the gzeira shava? Now, you'll notice we have a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. If you skim up the page to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text above, toward the beginning of the Isi Ben Yehuda source, there you saw the reference to the gzeira shava. The Gemara here is asking, what do I need to employ the gzeira shava for the Isser Achila? Lesi kulu b'kol v'chomer me'orla. Why not learn everything from the use of kal v'chomer logic using orla as a starting point? And here is the suggestion. Uma orla shelo nevda bo avira asura bein b'achila bein mano. Orla, which is the fruits during the first 3 years of a tree where no sinful action was done, and yet orla fruit is asur, whether it be eating or deriving benefit. Basar b'cholav shenev the bo'avera. Basar b'cholav, where a sin was done, eino din she'asur bein b'achila bein mano. Certainly it should be asur, like the orla, both eating-wise and benefiting-wise. So the question is, if we're willing to use kal v'chomer logic for deriving the iser to benefit from Basar B'Cholav from Orla, why not in the same breath derive the iser of eating as well? And yet, the Braisa, in order to determine the iser of eating Basar B'Cholav, it used a gezeira shava using the expression kodesh. The Gemara answers, Mishum de'ika lemeimar. Notice, of course, you see the triangle is inverted. And so we say, because we could respond, we could challenge that kal v'chomer as follows. Choresh b'shor u'b'chamor v'chosein pi pora v'doshba yochiach. These two actions, which we described earlier in today's shiur, the plowing with two different varieties of animals or threshing with a muzzled-up cow, can prove to the contrary, namely, shenevda bohem avera, here an action was done while doing something prohibited, was a prohibited action, visharu, and the outcome is mutter ba'achila. So that by the mere fact that a prohibited action was done, doesn't necessarily lead to the conclusion that there will be an iser achila. Therefore, in order to determine that there's an iser achila, I need the gezeira shava. Now, once I determine that there's an Isra Achila with the Gezerah Shava, I then go to the next step, which the Brisa did, and learn the Isra Hana using the Kal V'chomer from Orla. The Gemara asks, this is a new question, but based on that which was taught in the source, Loma li lemeimar, why in the source does it say, Kile hakerem yochichu? By the way, you can see the little arrow we have to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. This draws your attention to the arrow found a bit above, pointing to the last line of the Tanaic source. Why, in order to determine the prohibition of Boser B'cholov, do we have to go to Kilei HaKerem, which was a new example? Lema, why not say, in other words, let's just review the point. We mentioned Kilei HaKerem, we brought that into the discussion after having cited that Chametz Pesach could not serve as a precedent because of the extra severity you find by Chametz Pesach, namely that it carries with it an Isser Kores, an Onush Kores, an Oinish, a punishment of Kores, which is not the case by Boser B'cholov. So, maybe Boser B'cholov wouldn't be Oser B'hanoah. So to that the Gemara answered, well, Kilei HaKerem can show us to the contrary, that even though something is not punishable by Kores, yet it does carry with it an Isser HaNoah. We are asking right now, why did you have to cite Kilei HaKerem? Could you not have gone back to Orla to accomplish the same thing? Lema, the Gemara says, Orla tochiach. Let Orla prove the point. Here is an example of something that is Osir Bahano, and yet it doesn't carry with it an onish, a punishment of Kores. V'lehadar dino, and then let the logic revolve. V'lesi b'mahatzad. When we say let the logic revolve, we would be saying that, all right, you just presented Orla, but don't forget, Orla is something that didn't have a shasa kosher. So to that we would then bring in Chometz v'Pesach. And let us prove Boser B'cholov, v'lesi means derive Boser B'cholov b'ma hatzad, through a common denominator between Orlo and Chometz. Between Orlo and Chometz, we know that we have things that are prohibited, and their prohibition is b'hanoah. So too, Boser B'cholov is something that is prohibited, and its prohibition would be even to derive benefit from. So the Gemara has to answer now, why was it so necessary to bring in Kilei HaKerem? Omar Ravashi, Mishum De'iko Lemeimar Nevela Tochiach. Because had I not brought in Kilei HaKerem, I would have, had I just had Orla and Chometz Pesach, I would have said that Nevela will prove to the contrary. Sha'asura b'achila, here's another example of something that, like Orla and Chometz Pesach, are osir to eat. However, umuteres b'hanoah. It is, though it's osir to eat, it nevertheless is something you are allowed to benefit from. So had we tried to use a common denominator of Orla and Chometz by saying these are things that are osir to eat and they are also forbidden to benefit from, so too, Boser B'cholov, which we know from the Gzeirah Shavah is usher to eat, it therefore follows that it is usher to benefit from, we would challenge that conclusion through the case of Nevela and say, here's something that's usher to eat and yet you're allowed to benefit from it. So maybe the same thing by Boser B'cholov. At this point now, the Gemara challenges this answer. If we are successful in challenging the answer, that means that we're going to be back at the question of why was it really necessary to bring in Kilayim. So we're going to now challenge Ravashi's answer. Omale Rav Mordechai the Ravashi. Hochi Amrinon Mishmei de Reish Lakish. There's a note that accompanies the use of the double underline. As you can see in the next few lines, this marking appears a few times. We have in our Mivneh, the heading in the outside margin, the double underline is featured, and we've noted Klolim, principles or rules, Shenemru Mishmei de Reish Lakish. We'll have several citations of Reish Lakish as we go on in the Gemara, where he gives us rules, Eich Mafrichin Limudim Shonim. How does one go about challenging different methods of teaching? There are the Limudim Shonim include Tzad HaShaveh, where I try to determine something through viewing a common denominator between different elements. And when I present different elements and then and extract from it a common denominator, which we call tzad hashaveh, if I want to challenge that type of limud, there are rules how to challenge it. Then there's another situation called lo im amris. That's a situation where I cite a specific example and attempt to use it as a source for something else, and yet I can say, one second, I can't learn from that particular element, that singular element, because of certain features that it has. That's a different form of logic or of teaching or of conclusion reaching than the case of Tzad HaShoveh. In the case of Tzad HaShoveh, I was deriving something through a common denominator of different elements. In the case of what we call here Lo Im Amris, is where I was trying to derive a conclusion from comparing an item to a singular point. This will become a little clearer as we go on in the Gemara. What happens right now, as we said, Rav Mordechai challenges Rav Ashi's answer. Rav Ashi tried to tell us that had we tried to use the Tzad HaShoveh of Orla and Chometz, Rav Ashi said, I could have challenged that through bringing in the example of Nevela, which would have posed a problem. Rav Mordechai says, you would not have been able to bring in Nevela. Omerle Rav Mordechai l'Rav Ashi, Hochi Amrinon Mishmei Dereish Lakish. Thusly it is taught in his name, Kol Mahatzad, when you have a limud, some type of teaching that's derived through a tzad hashavah, through a common denominator, as we would have done in the case of Orla and Chometz, Migufo Parchinon, Me'almolo Parchinon. You're allowed to challenge it, provided you use some type of inherent factor. Migufo means from within. From within the examples of Chometz and Orla, if you can show how some element, some aspect of them, of Orla and Chometz, shows us that you cannot derive from them Boser B'cholof, then fine. However, to bring Me'alma means an outside case. The case of Nevela, Lo Parchinon, that is not the way to undo a Gezerah, a limud that comes through a Tzad HaShoveh. So the Gemara asks, well then, if that be the case, then I Hochi, Tesi B'mahatzad. So once again, so you're telling me that I can't undo the limud from the limud. I can't undo the tzad hashaveh through citing nevela. So then tesi b'mahatzad. So derive the prohibition of boser b'cholov from orla and chometz, and say, as we suggested earlier, that just like Orla and Chometz are forbidden to eat, and they carry with it a prohibition of Hanoah, so too, Boser B'cholov. Well, the reason that we don't do that, and is because Mishum De'ikol Mifrach, because we could have challenged that Tzad HaShoveh, Ma La Tzad HaShoveh Shebohen, Shekein Gidulei Karka. They lack the use or the limud of Orla and Chometz have inherent to them a common factor which makes it unlike the Boser B'cholov. And what is that? That they are plant growths. Orla are trees. Chometz is grain that grew from the ground and eventually processed into flour, into baked good. But it's gidulei karka, which is not the case of Boser B'cholov, milk and meat. Now, what was the suggested solution, though? True, we didn't use the Tzad HaShoveh, the Mahatzad, between Orla and Chometz, but so the Braisa, what did it do to solve that problem? It brought in Kilei HaKerem. But doesn't Kilei HaKerem have the same lacking to it? Ihochi Hashtonami. Now that you're trying to prove Boser B'cholov from Kilei HaKerem, Ikol LeMifrach, you could still ask the same question, Malik Kilei HaKerem, Shekein Gidulei Karka. That also is different. It's growth from the ground. It's a mixed breeding when it comes to a vineyard. How can you learn from that to Boser B'cholov? And yet, that seemed to be okay. And if you say that's okay, then why didn't you use the Tzara Shav from Orle and Chometz? Amalei Rav Mordechai, Ravashi. Now here, Rav Mordechai represents an answer. Just note the interesting structure here. Before, Rav Mordechai was bringing a Reish Lakish principle as challenging an answer. Here, Rav Mordechai is going to bring a Reish Lakish principle in order to defend the Brisa, in order to defend the answer of Kilei HaKerem. Amalei Rav Mordechai Ravashi, Hachi Amrina Mishmei the Reish Lakish. Thusly, we teach in the name of Reish Lakish. And here he gives us a couple of principles. Kol Mahatzad, when you have a limud that comes through a common denominator, Parchinon Koldehu, you can challenge the common denominator method, the Tzad HaShava method, by citing any difference, even if the difference is not a function of chumrah, of severity, or kula, or of laxity. Once you can point out any difference, that is sufficient for undoing a limud from a tzad hashava, from comparing a common denominator of different elements to the other topic that you want to derive. If I can show you that in the list of common elements, in the two common elements, that there is some kind of difference, then that's enough. So, and we did that in effect that if we would have used chametz and arla, I would have said, well, they're different than basar b'chalav insofar as the fact that they have common to them gedulei karka. The fact that it grows from the ground is not an element, is not in and of itself a point of severity or point of leniency. It's simply a point of difference. So that if you would have had a limud like a tzad hashaveh from Orla and Chometz, I would have said, well, you can't learn Basar B'cholov because Orla and Chometz have common to them something uncommon to the Basar B'cholov in the sense that they are Gidulei Karka. So that's why the limud from using a Tzad HaShava of Orla and Chometz B'Pesach would not have been successful in deriving the Isser Hanov by Basar B'cholov. Another point, Lo imamris. When you have something derived from one other element, in other words, not a common denominator, but let us say, like we're doing right now, we brought in Kilei HaKerem, and we say, look, Kilei HaKerem is something that's Osir Bachila, and it's also Osir Bahanah, so too, Osir Bacholov, which is Osir Bachila, it too will be Osir Bahanah. Now, if you want to say, Lo imamris, that's the expression that we have with our singular quotation marks. If you want to say, well, you can't learn from Kilei HaKerem because it happens to be Gedulei Karka, that would not be a legitimate form of undoing the limud, of undoing this teaching. Why? Because Reish Lakish's rule is, Kula kal v'chomer. This, by the way, is not the common use of the expression kal v'chomer. These are two separate words. Kal and chomer. That means, if you want to undo learning, let us say, B from A, in our case, learning Basar B'cholov from Kilei HaKerem, you'll have to prove, let us say, some type of either extreme leniency that you have by the Kilei HaKerem, or some type of extreme severity. Since here we're trying to derive a chumrah, you're trying to derive a prohibition of deriving benefit, I would have to show that by the Kilei HaKerem there's some type of exceptional stringency which results in it becoming Osir Bahanah, and hence it could not serve as a basis for the Basar B'cholov. However, in the absence of showing some type of extreme chumrah, mentioned, alluded to by the word chomer, by simply saying the Kilei HaKerem is Gedulei Karka, that is not a sufficient method of showing a distinction between it and the Basar B'cholov. So as the second rule says, let's just read this again from the number 2, a Lo Imamris style limud, which is what we're doing with the Kilei HaKerem, Kal Vochomer Parchinon, the citation of an extreme leniency or extreme severity, Parchinon, is a method of undoing it. However, Kol Dehu, lo Parchinon. Kol Dehu is what we've done with it by trying to say Gidule Karka, by trying to say that there's a difference, and the difference is not related to leniency or severity, but simply a feature difference, that it happens to grow from the ground. That's not a sufficient method of undoing a limud like this. The Gemara asks, "V'lifroich likulhu." Now, before we go on with this question, let's glance at the Rashi. Three lines from the bottom. "V'lifroich likulhu." The kevan delav chado mechado hi. Since the limud that we're doing right now is not one from one, we're not learning boser b'chola from one element alone. Elochad mitlas. We're learning it from three elements. In other words, we introduced Arla. That was not successful. Then introduced Chomes and Pesach. That was not successful. Then we introduced Kilei HaKerem. There are three separate elements that are introduced. Each one was supposed to be the source for Basar B'Cholov, and the first two seemed to fail. Then we came on to Kilei HaKerem. But it's not. In order to get to the Isser Hanol by the Basar B'Cholov, we had to go through three elements. So Rashi explains, kema hatzadomi. It's like a mahatzad. It's not exactly, but since we're using three elements, even though it's on a one by one basis, it's not simply seeking a common denominator. But since in order to get to the conclusion, we have to go through three different examples, so it's like a mahatzad. Oh, hilkoch lifroch bekulu. So therefore, let us use the pircha of gidulei karka, v'yafagav delav kula v'chumrahi, even though it's not an example of an extreme leniency or severity. Dekos salka daitoch techi amrinon below imamris delo parchinon bekodu. The havamina right now is the rule that we just said, that in the case of lo imamris, you don't use the kolduhu type pircha. Hani mi leechad asiyu chada mechada. That's only in a case where it was literally one derived from one. Kagon bereish milsa. Just like in the example of the beginning of the process here, the boy was sui me'orla, where we wanted to learn Bosa B'chola from Orla alone, but me'orla l'chuda, that means Orla by itself. Avochala mitarti o mitlas, but when you have this build-up that we've done so far, we tried Orla, we then moved on to Chomes HaPesach, then when we moved on to Kilei Kerem, so it's kemahatzad ami, it's like a mahatzad. Even though we don't have the standard expression of it, that we go back and revolve around and around, drawing a common denominator, nevertheless, let us ask this question, this pircha of koldehu. And that's the Gemara's question. Second line from the bottom, where the triangle is pointing up, v'lifroch l'kulhu, why not nevertheless still ask our challenge, ma l'kulhu, Shekein Gilulei Karka, Chometz, Orla, Kilei HaKerem, all of them have in common that they grow from the ground, unlike Basar B'Cholov. So that even though we bring in Kilei HaKerem at the end of the day, why is that a sufficient way of learning the Isser of Hanol by Basar B'Cholov? So the Gemara answers, Elo Omar Le Rav Mordechi Le Rav Ashi. Once again, Rav Mordechi is going to cite another rule or the refinement of the rules of Reish Lakish as an answer for what we are doing. And to just review the point before we read the answer, we are maintaining that the response of Kilei HaKerem was a solid source to learn from it the Isser of Basar B'Cholov Behano. And as far as trying to say that, well, it's a kind of Tzad HaShoveh situation where I learn from three elements, even though I didn't cite a common denominator, I still am entitled to ask the Pircha of Kolduv that they are Gidulei Karka. That's not so. And that's now explained. Hochi Amrinon Mishmei Dereish Lakish. The Gemara goes on to the top of Kuf Tes Zayin Oman Aleph. Thusly is said in the name of Reish Lakish. And now there's almost a sort of review of the different points that we have discussed till now. Chado mechado. When you have one element learned from one thing. In other words, like we did at the beginning, try to learn Basar B'Cholov from Orla. That's chado mechado, boser b'cholov, one thing from Orla. Well, in order to undo that, kula v'chumra parchinan, kol dehu lo parchinan. There, in order to undo a limud like that, that was similar to the expression we used before, the lo im amris. There, you're entitled to undo it if you can show that Orla has, and since we're learning here in the direction of severity, so that Orla has a particular severity that is not found by Basar B'cholov. And we in fact did that by showing that Orla did not have a Shas HaKosher, since it was never allowed. So that was why that's how we undid the limud from Orla originally. That's called Kula or Chumra, that's Parchinon. We can challenge it by citing an exceptional stringency that you have by the source element, in that case Orla, called Kol Dehu Lo Parchinon. By citing that Orla is Gidulei Karka, unlike Basar B'cholov, that would not be a way of undoing a limud where you have one derived from one. Chado Mitarti, if you have one point derived from 2 points, well, we afilu kol dehu parchinon. Then you are allowed to challenge it with a kol dehu kind of challenge. Well, that Rashi points out, and here there's maybe a nuance over here, that had I had the Orla and Chometz B'Pesach alone, even if I wasn't learning it in a straight-out Tzad HaShoveh fashion, but since I'm using two elements to get to the Isser of Basar B'cholov, Rashi points out, even if I didn't Chozer Hadin go back and use a common denominator and didn't use an actual Tzad HaShoveh, nevertheless, we would have been allowed to challenge that by saying, well, it's called, you know, a Kol Dehu challenge, naming they are Gedulei Karka as opposed to Basar B'cholov. So using the limud of Orla and Kilei Orla and Chometz and Pesach, that really would not have taught me about Basar B'cholov. Now, Chado Mitlas, if you've got a situation where I'm learning 1 point from 3 previous points, as we have right now, we've got Basar B'cholov being derived from Orla, Chometz B'Pesach, and Kilei Akerem. Had the style have been that after citing Kilei Akerem, the Braisa would have gone back and said, well, that, you know, Kilei Akerem is different in some aspect, and then I would have gone back and said, let's learn from a common denominator running between all of them, namely Orla, Chometz, and Kilei Akerem, then I would have been able to undo that through the Kol Dehu type pircha. Now, the E lo, if it doesn't go back, if the Braisa didn't go back and seek out a common denominator, which in fact the Braisa did not do that, it didn't go back after citing Kilei Akerem and say, well, we have here a common denominator, but rather it was relying on Kilei Akerem by itself. In order to undo that, even though, and let me emphasize here, even though we came to Kilei Akerem after citing two other elements, but since at this point in the Braisa, it didn't go back and seek a common denominator, Kula v'chumra parchinon, kol dehu lo parchinon. The only way to challenge it is by citing some type of exceptional stringency that you have by the Kilei Akerem, and not by simply saying that Kilei Akerem is a Gidulei Karka. So, at this point, we would seem to understand why the Kilei Akerem limud is a solid limud. The Gemara asks, but still, v'lifroch, but still, isn't there room to ask, ma l'kilei akerem shekein lo hoiso lohen shas hakosher? Kilei akerem is a vines that grow together with grains, and the grains that develop, let's say, in a vineyard, is it not so that they never had a shas hakosher? They were never allowed, as opposed to basar b'cholov. So in fact, we have a chumra by the kilei hakerem that you don't have by the Basar B'cholov. So Omar Rav Ado Bar Avo Zosomeris, the fact that we didn't undo the limud of Kilei Akerem, this goes to show us Kilei hakerem ikoron nesar v'hoysolen shasa kosher kodem hashrosha. That Kilei hakerem actually did have a point in time that they were allowed. These grains that were planted in a vineyard that are called eventually Kilei hakerem, before they took root, they were not forbidden. And only at a certain point, namely at the point that they take root, then the whole plant, the ikoron, the original seed, the original growth becomes usur. But prior to it taking root, it in fact is allowed. So that you cannot say that Kilei hakerem has a stringency that Basar B'Cholav does not have, namely that Kilei hakerem never had a Shas HaKosher, when in fact they did have a Shas HaKosher. The Gemara now asks, we just got finished saying that Kilei hakerem had a Shas HaKosher, like Basar B'Cholav. And what's the Shas HaKosher? The Shas HaKosher was prior to their taking root. And the taking root is what creates the Isser of Kilei hakerem. To this, the Gemara asks, challenges. Mosiv Rav Shmaya Bar Zeira. We have a Tanaic source. As you can see, it is in a frame, as all Tanaic sources are in our Gemara markings. Amavir Otzitz Nokuv Bekerem. One who carries a flower pot with a hole in the bottom, and he carries it, let us say some grains are growing in the flower pot, and he carries it through a vineyard. Im hoisif mosayim osir. If there is additional growth in the flower pot while it's over the vineyard, while it's in the airspace of the vineyard, the Gemara assumption when it comes to agriculture and growth is that nutrients of the soil actually rise or are experienced in the air and will rise through the hole in the bottom of the flower pot. So it's viewed as if this flower pot with the grains growing in it are actually deriving nutrients or nourishment from the vineyard, being that it has the nekev in it. If there is additional growth, what's called Hosif Masayim means a 1/200th increase. So that you had, 199 parts that grew before it entered the vineyard, and now one part grows in the vineyard. That's 1/200th of the total amount is a result of growth in the vineyard. Osir, it says, that creates prohibition. And what we want to do is infer that hoisif in, additional growth in the vineyard, is what creates prohibition. Loi hoisif lo. But if it's not growing, if you don't have this additional 1/200th growth in the vineyard, so then there is no isser. So the Rabbeinu Gershom, you'll notice at the bottom part of the page, we have it marked off with an underline. There is a little aleph that is a comment that helps as far as the reading of the Rabbeinu Gershom from the very bottom line of the Gemara. And he says, Nira de tzor chlomar hoisif in, chlomar im hoisif, if there is additional growth in the vineyard, this additional 1/200th growth in the vineyard, oz ne'asar, then there is prohibition. Lo hosif, lo. And now we go to the continued text in the Rabbeinu Gershom, and we say that as a result of this inference, that hosif in, lo hosif, lo, the ketzet amris denesar mishas hashrosha. How is it that you say prohibition sets in from the point that it takes root? The implication from this source is only if you have, let us say, a plant that's growing already, and it increases after it's already growing, it's already taken root, it's growing, and it increases in the vineyard, that's when prohibition sets in. However, by the fact that it took root, the taking of the root itself, that does not necessarily, that doesn't indicate prohibition. The Gemara answers, and notice you have this is actually the final inverted triangle in this whole give and take, and the Gemara then answers this particular question, Omar Abaye, he says, Trey Kroik CV. In the context of Kilei HaKerem, there are two psukim that will say need to be resolved. And through the resolution, we will understand what we have said. Ksiv Pen Tikdash Hamalea, that's one pasuk. Rashi explains Hamalea, it says, Mashma Miluyo V'Tosafto. It's something complete and additional. Uksiv hazera. There's another pasuk that uses the term hazera. In fact, you can see we've included this on the side of the Gemara, Dvarim Perikov Beis Pasuk Tes. It says, Lo sizra karmacho kilayim pen tikdash hamaleo. That's the first expression we saw in the Gemara. Hazera asher tizra. The word hazera is the second expression we saw in the pasuk in the Gemara. It says Asher Hazer Asher Tizra Utvua Sakerem. So these two expressions, Hamalea and the word Hazera, that are found in the same pasuk, actually represent or sound like two different elements, two different experiences. Rashi says Uksiv Hazera Demashma Zrio Atzmo, the basic planting, the initial planting of it. So let's go over the seeming problem. On the one hand, Kilei HaKerem seems to result when you have a complete plant that increases in size while in the vineyard. On the other hand, you see that Pasuk indicates that the initial planting is what creates the Isser. The Gemara explains there is no contradiction. How are we to resolve these two? Zorua me'ikoro v'hashrosha. If something is planted initially in a vineyard, in other words, we have a vineyard and you plant wheat in the vineyard. So, at what point does the wheat plant become forbidden? That's when it takes root. In other words, there's a germination that sets in before it takes root. During that time that it germinates, before it actually takes root, it is not forbidden. That's what we called before the Shas HaKosher that Kilei HaKerem has, making it like Basar B'cholov. The Basar B'cholov, before it boiled up, it was also a Shas HaKosher. And hence, just like Kilei HaKerem is forbidden to eat, and it carries with it a prohibition to benefit from, so too, Basar B'cholov, which is forbidden to eat, it too carries with it a prohibition to benefit as well. And as far as Shas HaKosher is concerned, Kilei HaKerem, like Basar B'cholov, had a Shas HaKosher, so it's a fair comparison. The other point, Zorua Oba, the Gemara goes on, if you have a wheat plant that was already growing outside of the vineyard, then we say, in order for it to become prohibited, hosif in, if it increases 1/200th in the vineyard, then it becomes forbidden. Lo hosif lo. If it wasn't in the vineyard long enough to grow this extra 1/200th, then it will not become forbidden. Masnisin velo ki haitano. At this point, the Gemara points out that our Mishnah is not like the following Tana. We have accepted till this point that Basar B'cholov was Asur not only B'achila, but also Asur B'hanah. And we have been discussing this for quite a while now with, as you can see, all of the diamonds that accompanied this particular sugya. We were all the time demonstrating how Basar B'cholov happens to be Asur, not only B'achila, but also Asur B'hanah. So that particular point of view that is in our Mishnah that said it's Basar B'cholov is Asur B'hanah is not like the following Tanaic source. Now, you'll notice we have a diamond here, but it's a different looking diamond, and we've called it number 6, and the diamond is made with a dashed line around it. This indicates the point that it's different. However, it's part of the series in the sense that the source gives, this particular Tanaic source presents another source regarding prohibitions surrounding Basar B'cholov, namely the prohibition of eating, but not the prohibition of benefit. So, in that sense, it's relevant to the entire series that we've learned till now, with this point of difference, that all the approaches we've taken till now indicate an Isser Hanah as well. Here, not so. So our Gemara continues. Desanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda quotes Rabbi Shimon and saying, "Bosar b'cholov osar b'achila u'muter b'hano." Notice how we've dashed underline muter b'hano because this is the main point of bringing in the source that bosar b'cholov is forbidden to eat, but it is muter to benefit from. If you happen to have it and want to sell it, you can do that and benefit from the money. Shenemar ki am kodosh ato v'nemar lahalon v'anshei kodesh tiyun li. So you have the pasuk that we've seen before, ki am kodosh ato, and we saw this quoted in the context of basar b'cholov, and we have another pasuk that says v'anshei kodesh tiyun li ma lahalon osur b'achila umutur b'hano. Just like over there, there is a prohibition of eating, but there is an allowance to benefit. Afkan, so too with regard to basar b'cholov, asur b'achila umutur b'hano. We should point out that the gzeirah shavah, you can see the word comparison is through the word kadosh, and the second pasuk v'anshei kodesh tiyuni, it goes on to say basar basoda treifa lo sochelu lakelev tashlichun oso ma lahalon asur b'achila. Just like there, by treifa, the pasuk says, "Don't eat it, but you can give it to the dog, which is a benefit. You're benefiting by having your dog fed with this." So afkan, so too by basar b'cholov, we say the same thing. It's asur b'achila. It's asur to eat it, but mutar b'hano. It's mutar to benefit from it. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.